Welcome to We Grow California with your hosts, Darcy Villery
and Darcy Burke,
a safe place where we discuss water, agriculture, and everything that makes California grow.
We have guests from those who just drink water to those that make water policy, all passionate about the water issues that face all Californians today.
Join the conversation by liking, subscribing, and visiting our website, wegrowcalifornia.com. Let's get the conversation started.
Welcome in, everyone. Today, we're very excited to have you back to the We Grow California podcast. Today's an extra special day for me because our guest is Adan Ortega, current chairman of the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. And I'm not going to go into great detail with Adan's bio. I would encourage you to read it at mwdh20.com. But what I really want to talk about is his leadership in water. He is the first Latino chairman for Metropolitan Water District. He's the first chairman for the city of San Fernando, and he's the first chairman that was a former employee of Metropolitan Water District. Did I get that right, Adan?
That's right.
And one of the things that I'm most proud of your background is I've been very committed to small system assistance throughout my career in water, as have you and the smaller mutual agencies, which we'll get into in a little bit. But one of the things I thought was very stellar that I don't think a lot of people know is you were actually instrumental in starting the water education leadership for Latino leaders. And, you know, water education is obviously the first place to start when you talk about policy. That people have to understand what they're talking about before they can understand what they need to do next, right?
I was kind of curious, Adan, because we were chatting a little bit before we started recording. In your career, what do you feel like is the policies that you're most proud of as it pertains to California and water?
I think the policies I'm most proud of are those that relate to helping small water systems in California. And not only small water systems, but California has a whole series of public entities that I believe live in what they call the island of broken toys. And I'll give you a description. The mutual water companies in California, they were the first to establish cooperatives for farmers to have a common project for irrigation ditches and wells that was for their mutual benefit. These are not-for-profit corporations that are limited to charging only the cost of service, something that the broader society learned the value of 100 years later, right? Now we basically say that if you're going to collect taxes, it has to reflect the cost of service. Mutual water companies have been doing that for 100 years since California began. So now we're in a position where many of these systems are smaller. They don't have the economies of scale. And yet the regulations are structured in such a way, not that they're as much strict, but that they do not provide them time to comply. And I'll get into this a little bit more later, but I'm very proud of that. You know, the help we've given mutual water companies, I run a group called the California Association of Mutual Water Companies. We have a version of what is called the Aqua JPIA. This is where the larger water agencies get their insurance. We have one for small water systems. I can tell you that it is thriving. I don't run it directly myself. But I did help to start it, and I'm very proud that we now cover not just about 500 small water systems. We're increasingly attractive to agencies like Westlands Water District and Fryant. We cover their liability insurance and large agencies like the County Water Authority. So sorry for being so long-winded, but I'm very proud of the fact that we've done more, and it hasn't all depended on the largesse of the state to get started. These are truly small water systems that are banding together to help each other.
On that note, Adan, you know, you've seen it and I've seen it. Many of these rural systems or small systems are in disadvantaged or severely disadvantaged, not unlike the city you represent, which is the city of San Fernando. If I could make you king of water for the day, what would you do to really solve these types of problems?
I think the fundamental issue has to do with a concept called economic feasibility. Back in 2012, the state promulgated a standard for chromium 6 that was invalidated in 2017 because the courts found that the regulation had not been embedded through a proper study of its economic feasibility with private systems. And mutual water companies are not for profit, but they are private. And the state has since been grappling what do they mean by economic feasibility. They've made some attempts to address it by saying that, for example, if you pass a standard that you have to get the cheapest treatment possible, which for some small water systems are point of use devices that you put under the sink. Problem with that is that the manufacturers themselves will tell you that those devices are not intended for that purpose. We believe that economic feasibility means access to resources. And it means that if you're a large community and you have economies of scale, it's economically feasible to do things that others can't. If you're a wealthy community, it's economically feasible to do what others can't. If you're a poor community, it may not be feasible for you to do anything on time to meet these regulations, or if you're a small water system. So in that case, we believe that it's the state's responsibility to, at minimum, plan for these systems to be able to comply. It doesn't mean they have to come up with all the money at the same time. It could be that they have a compliance period or 5 years so that these small water systems can catch up, and so that aid and assistance and financing can be arranged so nobody gets left behind. And I think the reason this is justified is in California, we have the human right to water, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
People tend to believe that the human right to water is a bureaucratic exercise that was left ambiguously. A right is not a bureaucratic exercise. A right is an expectation that affects the very human condition. And it's an expectation that everybody has access to whatever resources are required to have safe drinking water. It's kind of like the right to an education. We have a public education system because the state takes that responsibility, because in most cases, it's not affordable for families to get the kind of quality of education that we have now. So that's my wish if I were king for water for a day.
So I'm going to follow up a little bit on that, because you touched on a point that I think is really critical, and that's financing it, right? So the state has made a commitment to take a certain percentage of the general fund every year and put it towards education. The state has not made that same commitment to put towards water infrastructure. And I think we're reaping what we've sown, right, over these last extended dry periods and regulatory restrictions on how we move water and capture water and store water. We have not invested that same amount of resources into our water system that I think ultimately leaves these smaller systems even further behind. Because if the larger systems, they may have the expertise and the sophistication to access money or grants or loans. And I know that smaller systems, in order to comply with those, have to demonstrate a technical, managerial, and financial aptitude in order to get those dollars. In your work with the CalMutuals, have you found that you're bringing some of that technical, managerial, and financial training or education or resources to help them, in addition to just regulatory compliance?
Yes. So we have, as a result of our advocacy for small water systems, have attracted special districts and municipal utilities that also serve disadvantaged communities. And what was born out of that is an effort to empower larger systems to help smaller water systems. So I can show you, for example, in the Coachella Valley Water District has taken some political risk and some financial risk by applying for grants that will consolidate or help the small water systems out in the outlying areas of the low desert. And they basically build the infrastructure or connect them to their pipelines. The Mojave Water Agency up in the high desert, they have another program that actually is self-governed by the small water systems, with Mojave actually coming in and helping them apply for grants and administer those grants and build projects. Water Replenishment District, an urban groundwater agency in LA County, is doing the same thing for systems in Southeast LA that have long been neglected and in need of, for example, manganese treatment and VOC treatments, volatile organic compounds. So there is a way to do it. We've been trying to convince the state that the one-size-fits-all model doesn't work.
Doesn't fit anyone.
we, for example, were instrumental in making sure that $130 million in funds from the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund were made available primarily to these small water systems in the Central Valley. Regretfully, there was an audit that was released about a year ago showing that the state wasn't actually being very successful in having that money on the ground helping anybody. And so I hope the state will evolve from their one-size-fits-all to one that's more modular and that empowers the larger systems to help smaller water systems. I think the changes at Westlands, for example, may provide those opportunities in other parts of the state.
Actually, I live in one of those communities, and there's only maybe 100 outlets in my little water district, and the state's been moving forward on it, but it's been interesting to see the process in which, because I've been one of the more vocal members of the community that's been talking to self-help enterprises and working with them as they figure out, okay, how do we exactly do this? Because it hasn't really been done before. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like it's iterative steps. And I think it's going great. I mean, supposedly we're literally going to replace the entire water system because it's very antiquated. It's like a Christmas tree broken outlet. And so to keep us, the farm community that lives here going, it's going to be, I'm hoping it works out. I'm told that maybe the next few years we'll actually get it done, you know, cause I'd love to not have the water shut off of my house 3 times a year, you know, that kind of thing.
That's horrible. Yeah. Well, regretfully, I think we have a little ways to go until we convince the state. Part of the problem that the state has, for example, is that there's a lot of top-down type of consulting that they rely on. For example, there's folks from UCLA who have been providing the state with advice on how to undertake this program in the Central Valley. In many instances, they're not consulting with the operators of the system. Mm-hmm. And so think about it. If you're going to accept a state grant, you probably have to match that grant with some money, which means that you have to raise water rates. And the advocacy groups that are out there, you know, pushing the community to demand these changes, at the same time, will not support the water system when they have to raise the rates. And in fact, yep, it'll be the opposite. They'll accuse you of, you know, of robbing people or of overcharging them. And so they can't have it both ways. I believe that whenever a system is going to be supported, you have to engage the people that are operating it. It's a basic thing, and that's not always happening.
I love the word engagement too, by the way, instead of just informing or educating, but engaging, right? It's a much more active participation.
And in the Valley, I know, and I used to live in San Francisco, and it is, you still definitely engage the community, but out here it is so much of it is the information is passed person to person. I feel like more so, you know, at the coffee shops and just seeing people on the road and, you know, or out in the field kind of thing. It's really important because nobody out here wants to feel like I think people want to positively participate in the process, but nobody wants to feel like anything's being shoved down their throat, you know? So
it's called respecting human dignity. That's what that's called.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to
sadly have to make that a whole concept, but it is what it is.
And I wanted to ask a question because we talked to Jose Gutierrez at Westlands the other day, and I said to him, you know, if there's two agencies with the biggest target on their back, in the agricultural side, it's Westlands. And in the municipal side, it's Metropolitan. Like if you're going to point at, just because they're the biggest, they oftentimes get rocks thrown at them. But I think, you know, Metropolitan and the agricultural side of problems, you know, we can work together to solve real problems. And I'm curious, how do you see us? Cause you mentioned Westlands too, like how you see us working together to move forward? Cause it's an all hands on deck kind of problem that needs to be solved.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I find myself in this very unique situation where in my day job, I represent the very smallest. And in my volunteer work, I'm the chair of the largest municipal wholesaler in the United States. And I think it was Richard Nixon who once said that you can't appreciate the summits until you've walked the valleys. And certainly I've been walking the valleys for many years. And so from the heights, I can tell you that you get perspective and you can see things in proportion to what they are. So Metropolitan is a large agency. I recognize that it has been vilified by many for whatever reasons. But on the other hand, it's also an agency that represents almost, well, about half the state's population. I was with the head of the Bureau of Reclamation the other day, and she said Metropolitan covers half of the total constituency of that federal agency. So there's something to be said for what's within that. For example, we have probably the most diverse population in terms of ethnicity and background and economics, demographics. We also have the greatest diversity in terms of wealth and probably the greatest share of the state's burden when it comes to poverty and hardship. In many of our communities in this region, I was just talking to the president of IID down in the Imperial Valley, and we both realized that collectively, we represent some people that have the hardest luck in California. And so I think that brings it down to the ground, and I'm not very sensitive or reactive to people that might want to vilify the agency, because at the same token, we do a lot of good for millions and millions of people. And I think Westlands is the same way, given the miracle that they've brought about in an area that many people would say agriculture shouldn't exist. Just like many people might say that Southern California ought not to exist, given the distances that we have to bring our water from. But we're here, and now times are changing. You know, we're in the middle of climate change. It's upon us now. And you can't argue that maybe a lot more of the West is going to be like we've been accused of being. With climate change upon us, there's many parts that I'm sure people believe are natural and have bounty that may not have it for long. So we have a few things to teach, I think, the rest of the state when it comes to how you adapt to conditions that are inherently getting harsher and harsher.
You know, and Don, you mentioned a little while ago about walking the valleys and the summits. And as a retail agency dependent upon Metropolitan, over the last 2 years, I've really seen the Metropolitan board divided, not like I've ever seen it before. And that's not beneficial for anyone, neither the board, the member agencies, or our customers. How are you personally now as chair, right? You're the leader dealing with that. And what are you doing to build and strengthen inner board relationships?
Well, I can tell you, past leadership, I can't really discern what they were thinking. But it, you know, I reduced the committees by half. We had 15 standing committees, and yet I was able to appoint 33 of the 38 directors to leadership positions where they're either the chair of the vice or the vice chair of a committee, a subcommittee, or an ad hoc committee, or represent us on an external panel. And you have to ask, what was happening before that the leadership was the exclusive domain of a few? So one of the things that I've tried to do to unify the board is to give everybody skin in the game. When I was elected, it was being speculated that I would barely get in with a 50% plus two vote or something like that. And I actually got 81% of the vote. And our vote is weighted, so that's not an easy thing to do. Then I think the other thing that occurred is I present the last chair of Metropolitan could not get her executive committee approved by the board. I had mine approved with 93% of the vote. And the 7%, needless to say, was from the past chair who wouldn't vote for my slate. So no hard feelings, but I think a lot has to be said through inclusion. And a lot of people believe that like inclusion is just a discussion for minorities and people like that. I don't believe that. I believe inclusion means everybody. And in the fight that we're in to survive the changed climate, everybody's got to have skin in the game. And I think I've done so far, I think I've made some progress so far on that front. And I think that's bringing the board together.
So I'm going to come in. I had the opportunity to observe your strategic planning retreat, adapting to a changing environment, climate change adaptation, really in action, right? How do you envision Metropolitan? And I'm just one of 400 retail agencies. I serve a growing area, which is not all the case for all of them. And I personally appreciate that when I would put my two cents in, however that was, I mean, I'm a big advocate for acknowledging public health as a value out loud. You've always listened to me. We may not always agree, Adan. I'm totally good with that. But I think we always come to a reasonable answer. And now you're chair. And you've been able to work already on board relations. What's your top three goals as chairman of Metropolitan?
Well, my first goal is to adopt by the end of this year what we're calling a climate adaptation master plan for water in Southern California. The challenge that we have is the past. I think another layer of acrimony in Southern California has been between Metropolitan and the San Diego County Water Authority. There are questions in the context of that litigation that can impair our ability to adapt to the future. For example, without getting into any details, you have the definition of benefits. While benefits in the old world could be very differently described than benefits in the new world, and yet the way that you assess rates and apportion projects weighs on the definition of those benefits. So unless we resolve that litigation, this whole planning could be stillborn. And regretfully, it's in the hands of seven agencies that have decided to involve themselves in that litigation that in many ways, sometimes influence not the legal aspects of the litigation, but the political aspects of the litigation. Where if a director, for example, decides that they would like to seek a compromise or begin a negotiation and the seven agencies don't agree, they threaten to remove those board members. And so I'm very concerned that the board right now does not have a ability to make a decision that's for the benefit of all of Southern California without seven agencies weighing in politically to change the outcome. And so I'm determined to bring the board together. And part of that means bringing the member agencies together, you know, to address those political dynamics that I think could get us stuck in the past.
Good answer.
How can we help you and Metropolitan improve California's water supply reliability?
Well, I know that you all represent an agricultural constituency, and some of the most creative things that have happened in water have been, as you observed earlier, these partnerships between ag and urban agencies. In me, you have a chair who's a graduate of the California Ag Leadership Program. I was the chair of the Water Committee for the State Board of Food and Agriculture under Al Motna for 7 years. I know agriculture really well. And I think there's changes afoot in other parts of the state, like at Westlands. I noticed that some of the Delta folks are beginning to really reframe how they're looking at the course of mutually assured destruction that we're in right now on Delta issues. So I think that this is it's going to be an opportunity if we all get together to acknowledge climate change, what we need to do together. Or it's going to be reflected upon in history as a real lost opportunity. There's a lot of great people on the scene that have been aching to make a difference, who had been ostracized before. I mean, I got kicked off the board and came back later as a result of some of that give and take. It's politics. I don't take it personally, but it hasn't just happened to me. There's been others, and you know who they are in the Central Valley and other parts of the state. But I think we have an opportunity, and we're either going to do some great stuff. We all know each other. I think that's the other great benefit. We're either going to take advantage of it or we're going to miss an opportunity. So stay tuned.
So, you know, Adan, as you mentioned, you know, We Grow California is sponsored by the Exchange Contractors Political Action Committee. And, you know, We welcome anyone that wants to come learn about the great things that these farmers are doing. And I know the tagline, you know, our my job depends on ag, but I think people forget our food depends on ag, right? It's not just a job. It's really our family. It's the table. It's all of the traditions and all the diversity that's represented in Southern California. The first step to getting to yes is really to break bread together. That's typically how you start. And without our farmers, we don't have any bread. And obviously without water, they don't have any crop. So,
well, you know, I don't need to be persuaded about that. I'm very fond of the exchange contractors. I've worked with them in the past. I've worked with the Delta Mendota Water Authority and others in that region. And one of the things, you know, we did this exercise in 2007 on the State Board of Food and Agriculture under Al Motna, where we were consulting with the U.S. Army College back when Leon Panetta was at the Institute before he went to work for President Obama. And what we came out of with that process is the knowledge that ag is a strategic resource. The number one factor that impacts social stability is the price of food. When Mr. Panetta went to work for President Obama not long thereafter, it played itself out with the Arab Spring that we all remember, that was sparked by an increase in food prices in Algeria. So I think that there is a lot to be said for understanding each other. I'm very happy, Darcy, that the folks in the Central Valley depend on you, because you're a cross-pollinator between ag and the urban areas, as I've been. And so you and I are kind of cut off of the same cloth.
Well, I think we shared a great mentor together. And, you know, when I say sometimes we approach things from different perspectives, I've also come to learn that we usually come up with the same solution, no matter how we get there. So I really appreciate your mentorship and friendship, Adan. It means the world to me personally. So thank you very much. And thank you for joining us.
Nice meeting you, Darcy.
Nice meeting you too, Adan. Thanks for being on.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a We Grow California podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer or would be interested in being a guest, please check out our website, wegrowcalifornia.com. Sound and audio engineering provided by postandjam.com.